My name is Darren Hupke, and this is Pixels and Polygons. Welcome to a new episode. If you're listening along live, you can tell this is late. I meant to have this out on Friday, but life happens and it's delayed. So I'm going to be editing it together and posting it up here Monday morning when I'm recording this. And I still plan to have a new episode on Friday. So getting kind of caught up there. Don't really have a lot new going on. I'm toying around with a new format for future episodes, which will kind of help reduce the editing time I need to put into them, which means less likely to have these delay opportunities. So that'll be great, and hopefully give you just kind of more fun things to kind of listen to with each episode. Otherwise, like I said, nothing really new going on. The Patreon page still, patreon.com/DarrenHupke. You can click the follow along for free button. It doesn't cost you a thing, but I share some original video game writing and essays and different things that I've written just under one umbrella there. If you do like this podcast and you do like what I've got going on over there, there is a paid tier, and with doing that, there's a bonus podcast called Single Player where I just kind of ramble on about different topics, top 10 lists, rankers, just miscellaneous thoughts and ideas and things like that to continue talking about video games. So appreciate you all for checking it out, for listening to this podcast, for reading any of the writing, and yeah, I'm still working on my Final Fight book, the Beat 'em Up Volume 1. That's still going along pretty smoothly, but I've also started my document for the 30th Hubert Library Volume 5. If any of y'all remember the greatest hits branded, the games that were on the original PlayStation when games would sell a certain amount of threshold or whatever maybe. I don't remember the exact stipulation that Sony had for it, but they would get kind of republished with this really like crazy neon green like spine and this greatest hits branding. Those games, I think there's, without looking at it, I think it's, you know, almost 300 something games, nearly 300 games. But I wanted to maybe pick out 50 of those and put them in the next 32-bit library. So instead of it being one set publisher, this is a chance to kind of mix it up and still talk about some kind of bigger heavy hitter games, you know, games that don't have like a large publisher catalog. It's a chance to kind of sneak them in there and still get them covered. So if you'd like to help pick those games, I'll be doing like a poll or kind of ask the audience type of thing for support and kind of getting that list kind of wrangled down. So another reason to kind of follow the Patreon page. Otherwise, that's all I've got for you. This episode, I've got my friend Thomas coming back. It's been a little while since he's been on there. And then Jason Dvorak again from PlayStation Library and Game Rave TV. So enjoy the show, and yeah, I'll see you all later this week. All right, well, here's another episode of Pixels and Polygons. I've got my longtime friend Thomas back again. Actually, it's been a little while since we've actually recorded one, isn't it?
A while, yeah, it's been a little bit.
A while.
A couple months, yeah.
That's what you do. Your voice kind of cracked, and I didn't realize that's what you were doing.
It tilts out. Yeah, it went, it's been a while. Or, been a while. Could have done the it's been, but yeah, I decided to go the other route.
The other classic one. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, yeah, it has been a period of time since we have talked about the recorded questions that we have for the show, so we're going to get into that, but before we do that, let's kind of catch up with one of the newer icebreakers. So I like this one. Who is your favorite character who wears the color blue?
Oh boy, where's the color blue? Like as the primary color, or sure, just as an accessory color?
Sure, and it doesn't have to be your most favorite, I guess. Just what is a character you who's a character you love who wears blue?
I guess until Ganondorf was released in Smash, I think I was always playing Captain Falcon. I think that's blue. I do have some issues with blue and purple, and sometimes they blend together, but I think he wears blue.
Yeah, I think that's blue.
I think so.
A royal blue.
Yeah, I was just playing him in the original Smash games until the more, I guess, the stronger punch, slower Ganondorf showed up, and he got replaced. But yeah, I enjoyed Captain Falcon.
Okay. Captain Falcon, Mr. Blue, red helmet.
Falcon punch.
Falcon punch.
Falcon kick.
Falcon kick.
Show your moves.
Show me your moves.
I'll have to find those sound clips and splice them all in here. Maybe use stage music.
Yes.
You know.
Yes.
Just a simple yes.
I didn't realize he was your favorite Smash character, or I mean, the character you would use anyway. I guess that makes
way
sense.
Way back when, before yeah. like. I guess I also played as Ike a bunch, but that was also later on.
Yeah, but Melee style or even the original.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, cool. Okay, well, that does it then for the icebreaker.
Oh, it's been
a little
fun.
Bit faster.
All right.
Yeah. Oh, man. For the whole episode, yeah. One and done. 1 minute and we're out. We're going to do the this or that.
Seems long for me.
All right. If it's been a minute since we've had a explicit tag or sexual innuendos on the show, it's because Thomas hasn't been on the show. And now that he's back.
Yeah, that's all right. Yep.
They're coming back. Nicole is sitting behind me and she can't hear what you're saying. So she can only assume maybe the worst. But, you know, hey, it is what it is.
Yeah, it's about par for the course with me.
We're going to do the main question being this or that. So I've done this on a couple of episodes. It started out just kind of picking one and unpacking and kind of talking about that one. Oops, let me silence my notifications. Then it evolved with another guest where we asked like a bunch, like it kind of ran through like the gamut and stuff like that. So I think that's what we'll do. We'll run through as kind of as many as you can. If there's an interesting answer, we may like kind of pause to unpack it and ask from there. But yeah, what do you think? You up to the this or that challenge then?
Well, for sure. 20 seconds on the clock. Let's do it.
We asked 100 people their top 10 answers on the board are. All right, let's just go ahead and hit it off with first person or third person.
Ooh, boy.
Come on, you gotta pick one and put the gun to the head of the other.
Third person.
Okay, first person. Harvest Moon or Stardew Valley?
Stardew Valley.
Yeah. Is that just because quality of life and pacing? It's just simpler, funner, and deeper without so much of the slow-paced bulk of the earlier Harvest Moons?
Well, I mean, I don't think the newer Harvest Moons have done that much to
those don't exist.
So it's like, Stardew Valley has a more adult theme in their world. They have some sort of automation with the sprinkler systems. They have just extra stuff. Like a lot of it is quality of life, but I do enjoy the more adult themes to it a little bit more. At a certain point, Harvest Moon was just stunted in like this childish farm setting that just didn't appeal to me anymore.
Yeah, I've been having the itch to try the Story of Seasons Friends of Mineral Town just to see like how improved or updated that game was. But it's mainly just because, you know, I'm just looking for something different to play from Stardew Valley. But, you know, realistically, you wait a year and you come back to Stardew Valley, it's, you know, it's going to feel fun and new again and worth playing. So
there's I know you're not into that fantasy bullshit or whatever, but what was it? Ruin Factory was kind of in a farming, kind of not more battle oriented, but then Sunhaven, I think, is leaving early access. And that one is mostly about farming and relationships, but it scratches a pretty good itch on balancing. It's not as adult as Stardew Valley, but it's definitely a step up from the old Harvest Moon.
Hmm. Okay. Well, I'll have to look into that. Console or PC?
PC.
Hmm. It's a politically correct choice.
Damn, got me.
Action RPG or strategy RPG?
I'm going to say action RPG. I mean, there was a time when I preferred strategy, but I don't know. I just can't do it anymore. It feels too time consuming.
Hmm. Okay. Pixels or polygons?
Yeah, polygons.
Okay. Warrior or mage?
Mage.
Mage. Okay. Interesting. I thought you'd be going big buff army man.
I mean, I typically do paladin, which is kind of a blend of both, but I just like spells a lot more. They make things a little more interesting than just melee combat.
Okay, this one I'm thinking of more of like a horror game vibe, but stay and fight or run and hide?
Run and hide.
Yeah, I think at least running and hiding, sure. Running and reloading, running and maybe finding like some additional weapon for defense. But
well, unless you're fighting people that are infected by Las Plagas or something, and then you just mow them down or whatever. And
yeah, then you just make sure you get one kneecap so you can do a spin kick to knock down seven of them in front of you and start going to town, knifing them on the ground.
Yeah, you wouldn't think that thin frame would have that much power behind it, but whew, he could kick.
Medieval or sci-fi?
Medieval for me.
Like the original PlayStation game, Medieval, with Sir Daniel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, wait, that was the skeleton thing? Or
yeah, yeah.
Sci-fi's growing on me, but Medieval, I think, more leaning the fantasy Medieval. Well, that's the fantasy. True Medieval versus sci-fi. Actually, I changed my mind. True Medieval, because I did play, what was that stupid game called where you were an illiterate blacksmith? No, because that's fantasy. You were an illiterate blacksmith's son or whatever, and it's like a massive RPG, first person or whatever. It came out some years back. I tried to get into that, but it was too much. Well, an actual medieval setting, I don't really want to mess with.
So then let me update it then. Medieval fantasy or sci-fi?
There we go. Medieval fantasy. The fantasy part has to be there. If there's no magic and it's just bubonic plague and getting taxed by the lords, no.
So you're choosing to play a game like Two Worlds over Mass Effect?
Yes. And okay,
got it. You heard it here, folks.
You know that I have yet to play Mass Effect.
Yeah, I know. Mass Effect, though. Critical acclaim. Two Worlds.
Just,
ugh.
I mean, loved Two Worlds 2, stellar.
I loved those games. Those are just one of those like hard sevens, probably lower, really, like of quality of like, you know, what it was really doing. Yeah. But just something about like this, the mix and pacing. There was maybe the first one did it, but maybe in the second one, but you could like kind of dual wield like swords. And I had one that had like some like poison attribute to it and another one that had like acid or something like that. So I'd like swing these like swords around and at least like proc like some type of like enfeebling like damage to anybody around me. And like, I just love just kind of running and exploring that, you know, place and getting into combat like that. You totally got to make the game your own.
I remember that. I think it was the second one, but I remember the collision detection being pretty bad on combat with the short swords or like the like dual wielding, where I was like, oh man, I feel like I'm next to him, just not hitting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was strange. I mean, I even remember the animations looking kind of like wonky, but
oh yeah,
you just kind of stood in doorways and, you know, trying to make sure enemies weren't quite clipping at you and you were just clipping through to them. And, you know, you kind of broke the game a little bit to have some fun.
That's the case with most games.
Yeah. Ryu or Ken?
Ken,
okay. PlayStation, the original PlayStation, or Nintendo 64?
Oh boy. That one's super rough. I'm trying to think of all the blockbuster hits on each of them. I'm like, damn, they're...
Yeah, you can think of all three on the Nintendo 64.
Oh, man, there are more than that. There are more than that. I love the RPGs too much of that era. I'm going to go with PlayStation.
boy, poor Quest 64 never gets the date to the prom.
I beat that game 100% of it, man.
Okay, RPGs then. Tales of or Star Ocean?
Tales of.
Is this because quantity?
Quantity.
Yeah.
There have been some real, forget it, I don't even want to pick up the game again, Tales. But there's just so many. You get a bunch of cool stories. Like, I don't know if I ever say it right. Berseria, I thought was really good, obviously.
Symphonia,
Vesperia. Yeah. Vesperia, I think, was maybe the best, honestly.
I've been wanting to get that definitive edition one that they re-released, like, on the PS4 generation. One day I think I'll get that, because that was the 360 one, right? Yeah. I loved that one. Tales of Arise, the first 75% of it is one of my favorite modern RPGs.
Oh man,
that was a great
game. I thought it was a masterpiece until I hated
it. Yeah, until I couldn't believe it was continuing, and I couldn't believe they added on an entire extra like strange plot twist and like. I don't know what was going on there. Still great combat, though, too.
It's not strange for that game series to throw in a huge plot twist to extend the game. Like, I don't know, Tales of Destiny did that, but it was a cool extension.
Yeah, I wanted that as a kid to give me more value out of the game. Yeah, for Arise, I was like, oh, cool, like this is done. I can move on. And I was like, oh, no, this is not done. I'm not moving on, but I don't want to stop this or play anything different until I finish this.
Always the best side. All right, good. I can move on. I'm finished. That's exactly how a game should end.
So, AB or BA. So, this is like on a Nintendo controller, you have A on the far right side, like where the circle is. But on an Xbox controller, A is where the X is on a PlayStation controller.
I am AB. I'm more of the Xbox controller style.
Okay. Monster Rancher or Monster Hunter?
You know, if it weren't for the newer Monster Hunter games, I'd say Rancher. But man, that was just so good. So I'm gonna have to say Monster Hunter.
Yeah, I think so too. That was just more just a funny one. Turn-based or real time?
Turn-based.
Okay.
I'm thinking like strategies and stuff where I'm like, I prefer turn-based strategies over real time. Like I'm not, I don't really like StarCraft and all that type of stuff. But if you're, I don't know, like RPGs nowadays, I'm more of an action or real time RPG, not a turn-based RPG fan. So it was a difficult question, but
depending on the genre. Yeah. It makes sense.
Yeah.
Fox or Falco?
Fox McCloud.
Samus or Master Chief?
Samus.
Jack and Daxter or Ratchet and Clank?
Neither. So I didn't play either of those games. So.
You gotta pick one. You gotta murder the other ones.
Who do I? Is this a fuck, marry, kill, or is this a?
It's kind of. This is just marry and kill.
All right, I'm waiting for the last one though. I'll go with Jack and Daxter then.
All right. Single player or multiplayer?
Multiplayer.
Co-op or competitive?
Co-op.
Okay.
Oh yeah.
And let's round it out with a final one. Guns or knives?
Guns. I'm going to go with guns.
Guns. Okay. So, a co-op multiplayer with guns. So, Gears of War is your preferred title. Yeah. Oh, yeah, those are fun games.
Right. Third person, gun, co-op. Yeah, it's all there.
Yeah, it literally painted itself out. I was trying to find a question, like a From Software-based one, and I was going to pick like Chrome Hounds or Elden Ring or like something like that just to see if what was your pick. Because, you know, some people... Some people, to a large majority, a large majority of like modern gamers, FromSoft is like just essentially the Soulsborne like style of games. Like that's all they know of. But it's crazy. They have such a long history before that with things like Chrome Hounds and Armored Core and like even various ninja fighting games and it's crazy. Kingsfield, like, you know, there's a lot of things going on there. But Chrome Hounds, I was I did an article like E3 memories or something like that. I was like writing up, you know, just some of my memories from the few times I was able to go to E3. And I was looking at some of the pictures that I had from the random times I was there. And in one of them, there's like a giant Chrome Hounds like display like behind me. It's like just a series of 360s set up to play it and everything in their booth. And I don't remember actually ever playing that. Like, I don't think I went up and played that at the time in person and everything, but, you know, just a few months later, I'd be buying that game on the 360 and quite enjoying it.
I enjoyed it a lot, too. I always wanted to build, like, a traditional mech and, like, use it out there, but then, I don't know, the meta was just like, oh, someone fast with, like, melee is going to go and hit your base in the back. You're like, God damn it, all right, fine.
Yeah. Unless you had a set group to, like, really be balanced and built around, like you had to have some type of mobility and speed, you know. Like I did always want to use one of those like four-legged bipedal ones and get kind of like crazy with like ranged attacks and stuff, but
yeah
you just see some recon guy flying by and like, ah, oh, dang it, I've got to turn back, nobody else is turning back, I got to turn back. Good
now
times.
I'm hurting my own base because I have artillery or whatever, a big mortar.
Cool. Well, that's that then. I think that's the most this or that's I've asked, but I think that was good. I think that was fun.
I enjoyed it.
Save these for the future and kind of continue to add to this and give the next victim the gauntlet and all that stuff. But appreciate you for doing that, Thomas, and we'll definitely have you on more future episodes soon.
Ooh.
Bye. Welcome to another episode. I've got Jason back again in the studio. We're completely remote and we are not near each other whatsoever. But I've got Jason on the show.
It's the biggest studio ever, man.
It's not a dark bedroom in the middle of Arizona remotely being piped in. It is a studio that I have. This is a professional setup now. But welcome back to the show, Jason. I'm glad to have you. Hopefully everything's going well on your end of the town or your end of the world.
Yeah, definitely.
Before we get rolling, we'll do the icebreaker before we get into the bulk of the episode. So to try and catch you off guard here and have some fun, let's see. What is your favorite vehicle or mode of transportation in a video game?
Ooh, I'm gonna phone a friend. No, I kid. Favorite vehicle to use, our mode of transportation. The first thing that comes to mind really isn't a vehicle, but I guess it would be considered a mode of transportation. It would be either the cape flying in Batman Arkham Knight, or the shield, the wing shield, shield wing from Horizon's. For Forbidden West, there's just something about finding the absolute highest peak in the video game and throwing yourself off it and just coasting and checking out the land, you know, just, you know, having a good time. And then like accidentally letting go of the A button or whatever and dropping into a, like, you know, a pit full of mechanical dinosaurs or like 20 bad guys in Batman, you just start freaking out. It just makes it a good randomized like adventure to like mix things up instead of just going mission to mission and so forth.
Yeah, those are cool choices. Actually, yeah, I like the gliding and coasting. I always like wanted to I mean, like, it's one of those things. I'm old enough and I've thought about, like, game design enough that, like, I know there, as developers, Guerrilla went with Horizon and knew, like, the distance from, like, locations where they wanted you to access, like, at certain points of the game, and wanted them to be walled off until later points of the game. Like, you couldn't cheat the system and climb somewhere high and then get over a wall maybe you shouldn't belong at until, like, later in the game, or break it or anything. But I always liked the idea of being able to find things like that, you know, like, oh, well, maybe if I kind of shimmy around over here and kind of do this, will I be able to land somewhere or get somewhere that I don't quite belong yet, or, you know, find something, like, you know, extra hidden that'll, like, break the game and make me, like, stronger than I should be. But yeah, they're too good these days. Too big of teams, too big of games, too much QA and everything on them that to kind of let things like that go by.
Oh, yeah. Like, I was laughing too. I think it was Forbidden West. I'm one of my recent replays. I was like, you know what? I want to know if I can get to that top. And sure enough, I got to the top. I was like, holy cow, I can totally see what happens. And I took a step forward and you hit the invisible wall. And the game literally says, you can't go here. Go away.
Yeah. Invisible walls. cool. Well, I like those choices. Some cape coasting and some digital electronic cape coasting. similar modes of transportation. So for this main part of the episode, we're going to go to the it's a newer question that I ask, but the this or that format. So instead of picking just one thing, I think the evolution of this is it's just going to be kind of rapid fire. You don't have to answer them quickly. I mean, you can kind of elaborate and all that stuff, but, you know, once we finish talking about one, we'll move into another one, and it will be just a round robin of comparative things to pick between. So sounds good. Are you ready to go for this?
I am ready to question everything I believe in.
All right.
Let's do it.
So this or that, first person or third person perspectives?
Racing games, first person. Adventure games, third person.
First person for racing games. Interesting.
Yeah.
I do that.
It's because of the way, like, of all the things to, like, moan about it, like, with a racing game, like, in real life, you're not behind the car. So, like when I'm trying to play a game of racing game from third person, if I press left, like, I'm not really looking at the road, I'm looking at the car. And if the car visually doesn't respond the way you think it should, it just throws me off completely. I end up hitting the corner and so forth. But, like, once you're in first person, everything kind of works better, and you can be a little bit more cheeky with sneaking by depending on the clipping and so forth with most racing games. The only times it doesn't work for me is if for some reason they put the camera, like, in the bottom of the bumper, so you're looking up at everything. Like Tunnel B1, which is absolutely terrible as far as the camera angle is concerned. But yeah, it's always been first person for racers for me.
Gotcha. Yeah, I usually do, like, a tighter, like, camera view for racing games, but not quite first person. But then once the PSVR2 was released, and, you know, they had that Gran Turismo 7, like, update for it and everything, that, of course, you know, you've got to be in first person for that. You've got to, like, really, like, soak that in there and get super motion sick and not be able to play it for more than, you know, 30 minutes at a time or anything. But it's awesome for those 30 minutes for sure. Like, getting right in there. It's what I wanted to do right away was get into a Viper and go to the Laguna Seca, like, course, and go through that little, like, hairpin turn and, like, do that within first person or, like, in VR. And it was super cool, like, getting up to that turn. And, like, I remember, like, kind of, like, not, like, on my tippy toes, but, like, kind of, like kind of stretching out in my seat to kind of, like, look downward to make sure I could see the asphalt and know where I was heading and everything. It was a really, really, really rad experience. I think just thinking back all the way to, like, Gran Turismo, like, 1 and 2, and what those games were like, and playing that same course with the same car, and then suddenly doing it there on PS5 in VR, it was like, this is cool, like, you know, childhood to adulthood, like, wow, the world is wonderful moment. Cool. Well, let's see. Let's keep it PlayStation related. Jack and Daxter or Ratchet and Clank?
Ooh. I'd probably say Ratchet and Clank. I always have more of an affinity for sci-fi versus, say, like medieval or like, I guess, regular, if you will. And I've always liked Clank's design. Like, he's just a goofy little sassy little jerk.
Cool. All right. Well, let's see. Earthworm Jim or Booger Man.
Probably Earthworm Jim.
Did you ever play Booger Man?
I did, like, once in the family store I used to work at when I was bored one day, and I remember not really caring for it.
Yeah, I was, that must have been the right age for that. That was just hilarious to me, but so was Earthworm Jim, launching cows and things like that. You know, you can't really go wrong on that. Okay, well, those two games were both released on both the SNES and the Genesis. Which one would you choose there, SNES or Genesis?
Super NES, the Super Nintendo all the way. Like, that, not even a question.
Not even a question. Wow. Why is that? Do you want to care to elaborate a little bit on that? Just the library itself, the hardware, a combination of everything there?
I can be very... What's what we're looking for here? Not picky. I can be very... fanboyish when it comes to certain things, and even though the Genesis has like Gunstar Heroes and, you know, Contra Hardcore and stuff like that, like, the sound was just so bad. I am a huge Street Fighter person, and when Street Fighter 2 first came to the Super Nintendo, it was the Super Nintendo on my budget at that age was literally my Neo Geo. Like, it was just the absolute arcade machine. It was the fantastic graphics. The Mode 7 could do no wrong. Like Final Fantasy VI, Street Fighter II, Mortal Kombat 2. And then I finally picked up a Sega CD because I wanted to, a Sega Genesis to eventually get a Sega CD because I wanted to play the Lunar games. And I remember picking up Captain America as my first game for the Genesis, and then Street Fighter 2 Champion Edition, and I was just dismayed at, like, how badly the sound clips and the music were. Like, it was just, like, especially Street Fighter 2, like, I think it was Game Fan called it the Laryngitis Edition, and that was the best way to describe it.
That's funny. Okay. Well, then, let's see. I was going to ask the Tekken or Street Fighter, but I think I maybe have found your answer.
Oh yeah, Street Fighter all the way.
But how about Street Fighter Alpha or Street Fighter 3?
Oh, Alpha 3. Three has the best animation you'll ever see in a fighting game. But I couldn't get into a lot of the new characters, and I didn't like the hybrid ones where, like to explain what my definition of a hybrid is, like, in Street Fighters, you have the motion characters like Ryu and Ken, and then you have the chargers like Blanca and Chun-Li. In 3, they tried doing this weird thing where characters would have both charge and motion moves, and it kind of broke your thought process in trying to, like, make it work together. And I just, aside from the parry system, the animation, I couldn't get into it. However, Alpha 3 would be, like, a very good contender for another, like, greatest of all time game. Like, that. That's my baby. Like, yeah. I adore that game more than half the library.
Yeah. The Alpha 3, I'm assuming the PlayStation port of it with, like, the World Tour mode and everything.
Yeah. Even the Dreamcast one was really good with a couple of little extra tidbits. But yeah, I the fact that they quote unquote took the Pocket Station support away from us in America was a crime against humanity. But yeah, everything about that game was perfect, from character art to controls to unlockables, everything.
Okay, so Pocket Station or VMU?
To be the ass in the room, the Pocket Station, because when its battery's dead, it doesn't yell at me every time I turn the system on.
Oh, yeah, that loud beep.
That awful. Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, boy. The Dreamcast. I'm just thinking of Dreamcast questions.
That's all good.
Let's reset. Well, let's Daytona USA or Ridge Racer.
My friend Alan would punch me. It's Ridge Racer. Like, they're both equally good, but Ridge Racer is the absolute perfect just press gas and go. Like, that is the absolute best racer you can hope for. Like, I enjoy sim racing games, but like, I don't want to learn ratios and brake pad settings and so forth. I just want to hit the gas and power slide around a corner. That's all I want to do.
2D platforming or 3D platforming?
2D.
2D. Okay. That was yeah. Quick. Dragon Quest or Final Fantasy?
Final Fantasy. What's we're looking for? My only real entry in the Dragon Quest was the first one on the Nintendo, and then trying to play 7 on the PlayStation. And it's there's only so many hours in the day, and when you have to wait an hour to even start the game, it's like, no, I'll just go back to Final Fantasy.
Mm-hmm. Figure it out yourself or strategy guide?
Try and figure it out yourself until you reach the 30th day and there's a dent in your desk where you've been banging your head against it, and then go use the strategy guide and realize what you've been looking for is literally under your feet. Which actually happened to me with the Tomb Raider remake. I was down to the last mushroom and I literally could not find it, and I went to the one of the guys on IGN, and the arrow was the exact spot I was standing. I'm like, what are you talking about? And I literally turned the camera half a turn, and I'd been standing on the texture of the mushroom the entire time.
Oh, no. Did you used to buy the guides with your games, like, you know, in the PS1 and era and around then, you know?
Not really, unless there was... unless there was a really cool art section, or there was something that made the guide unique that I couldn't get for free on gamefaqs.com at the time. Not really. The problem was, at the time of the PlayStation, I was still working retail, and one of the perks of working at EB Games and GameStop was when they quote unquote pennied out items, especially guidebooks, you would just take the quote unquote tossed guidebook and, you know, save yourself $15. But yeah, and that, and a lot of times, because of how guidebooks had to be written, sometimes with an incomplete copy of the game or fast enough to reach to make a day one side by side release, the guides might be missing stuff. Like, one of my favorite examples is Beyond the Beyond is such an annoying game that every printed guide in America is missing the same one dungeon because the writers couldn't be bothered to deal with it.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's absolutely hilarious. I actually had to go online to gamefaqs.com, and the one guy that actually had it, even that author confess that he just bought the Japanese guide and translated that to use in his own guide.
That's wild. Yeah, those pennied out guides, I'd love just taking them home. I didn't care what it was. I would take it home and find some use for it, or save it for a rainy day, or some idea that I thought it was going to come up and ultimately never would really do much with it, or ended up taking it to a used bookstore years later or something like that to get a few bucks for them and stuff. But I used to love those times. One of the perks of being there. Streets of Rage or Final Fight?
Ooh, we're going to go Streets of Rage 2.
Boy.
Yeah, that hurt.
Yeah.
That's a knife in the chest.
I'm sure the contention was it's Final Fight 1 or Streets of Rage 2. Is that the choice? Yeah.
Yeah, specifically the Sega CD version of Final Fight 1.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Uzo Koshiro on Streets of Rage and whoever did the remixed Sega CD track, they bleep and nailed it. Oh my god.
Hmm. Yeah, that Sega CD version. I have that. I own that. I'm working on a Final Fight book right now, and I love that Final Fight series. Going backwards from Alpha 3 and seeing Cody and things like that. You know, it's all the lore in the world is all, you know, in my brain at all times, and so just expanding upon that, it's been fun. Let's do last one, the analog stick. On the lower section, like an Xbox style analog stick D-pad layout or a PlayStation style analog stick D-pad layout.
Oh, even or seesaw. Wow, that's a good question. You know what? When it comes to that, it doesn't really matter what the this or that for me is the concave or non-concave, and it's the concave. Like the 360 controller and the PS4 controller have different layout, but they have the concave on the stick, and it makes holding it so much better. Like when I've gone back to PlayStation 1 games, my hands just slide off the, I guess, roundish analog sticks of the DualShock. So I actually use, as long as the game supports it, I usually go back and use the original analog controller that's got the concave sticks that was in America for like a day and a half, and they cancel it. Yeah. So for that, don't matter.
Interesting. Okay. Well, I think we made it. We made it to the time mark and all that stuff. Those are some fun ones. I have to remember to go back and write down some of those and make sure I keep building this list for future guests as well. But thanks for running through the gauntlet there, Jason. Any final shares or final thoughts you want to say before we wrap the episode?
Just to shout back at you, the 32-bit books are freaking amazing, and they are so much fun to read, flip through, especially for the screenshots. It has gotten me off my butt to slowly start working on my own books. They're pretty inspirational.
Well, thank you so much for that. I mean, that's, just doing them for fun and just like your site, I guess. I mean, if I'm hearing that people are reading and enjoying them, then that's, you know, that means the time and effort has been worth it for something, you know. Thank you, though. We'll have you on a future episode for sure. Appreciate your time. We'll see you next time.
All right. Sounds good. See you guys later.